Hello, I'm Oliver Wang.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, one of those albums that burns a hole into the soul. And today, we'll be deep diving together into the KG's debut 1974 funk masterpiece, Keep On Bumpin' and Master Plan.
They were the best band perhaps you've never heard of. Seven brothers from Jersey, proteges of Kool and the Gang, whose sound was an amalgam of disco, soul, and funk. Man, they stepped onto the scene in 1974 with this album, Keep On Bumpin' and Master Plan. As it goes in music, some bands get big when someone else discovers them. That's where the prominence happens. And in 1992, when Dr. Dre sampled their Who's the Man with the Master Plan on The Chronic, he gave the KG's a second life and new listeners. After listening to this album in preparation for this, I was able to say this is a heat rock. It is funky for me, and hopefully after listening to this, it will be funky for you.
To talk about the KG's, we are joined all the way from Philadelphia by Bahamadia.
My credentials involve an instrumental. Rhymes for source, the cells in the mental. Relieves you of the vibe and then that you was used to. A since the parting days up in the juice crew. My style been milked like a bottle of Yoo-Hoo. Was never MC Monkey, see Monkey do. I move through, baby, real natural. Pose for Illidale when it gets lyrical. Ooh, ooh, like cool.
She first landed on my radar in the mid-90s as both a member of the Gangstar Foundation, as well as one of the artists helping to put Philly back on the hip-hop map in that era, especially through releases like her debut album Collage. More recently, she's been running her own label, B-Girl Records, and she's about to drop very soon her fourth full-length LP entitled Here. She also has one of the illest voices in the history of hip-hop, like distinctive to a key.
For sure.
Bahamadia, thank you for joining us here on Heat Rocks.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So I loved your pick because the KG's, to me, are in this middle zone where they were never as famous as Kool & the Gang, on the one hand, but not necessarily the most obscure funk artist either. And so they sort of exist in that, again, that gray zone right in the middle. Why did you want to talk about the group, and why did you want to talk about this specific album by them?
Just coming up in the 70s and just being exposed to, like, funk bands, like Confunction, you know, Brass Construction and the like, you know what I mean? I just gravitated towards mainly the bass lines, though, and the harmonies and arrangement.
Now, I'm wondering, when you were listening to music, what was your main point of exposure? Was it through your parents' record collection? Was it through radio? Were you buying cassettes, LPs?
Combination of all those things, but mainly just the music that was played throughout my household and my parents, and singers, particularly my mom and my grandmother sang. So I was always exposed to, you know, singing and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Studied percussion at Sediment House of Music for a stint during my adolescent years.
Ah.
And I actually started out as a DJ. A lot of people may know and may might not know. Yeah, and so, you know, my initial collection was my parents' collection and my grandmother's collection combined.
Of course, always.
Vinyl collection.
Yeah.
Yep.
And were the KG's the kind of stuff that you were spinning as a DJ back then?
Yeah, because it was all considered like, the era I got exposed to the culture as it was developing, all the different stuff that wasn't exploited so much on mainstream or supported on mainstream heavily, anything anti-establishment at the time was considered hip-hop. And so I was exposed to, you know, that, and it was all just one community at that time.
Was any of this music being played on the radio in Philly? Were you hearing this type of music on the air?
Yeah, we heard that kind of stuff on the air of WDS, and I think it was Georgie Woods at the time.
Okay, in our time right now, it's exactly 5 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. You're on the Georgie Woods Show, and we'll be here till 10. At 10 o'clock this morning, it's going to be the Louise Williams Gospel Program with Harrison Ridley. And I don't know, you know, Nelson Riddle was a great musician.
Yeah, he
playing his cool stuff. And then at the parties, too, like at the playground parties, mm-hmm. or dollar parties, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
I'm wondering, in terms of, I guess, regional identity-wise. You know, this is a group that they were formed out of Jersey. Their early releases came out on Gang Records, which I'm assuming was a Kool and the Gang imprint. And on the on the actual physical label of the records, it describes the stuff on Gang as the New York sound. But I'm wondering, was it unusual to be listening to New York stuff in Philly? Did people care about the kind of geographic and, you know, rivalry elements in music consumption, I guess?
I think that was the business of music element there in terms of the labels and the marketing. But I think that as a community of musicians, like anybody in the tri-state area associated with it, you know, a New York and Jersey and Philly, it's all like we're like neighbors, you know. And so even when the tours and stuff went on, like different concerts and stuff like that, those were the markets that they hit, you know. And so I just like to always envisioned it being like one big community. I think I was too young to even be aware of any, like, rivalry or any type of thing. Like, I was just listening from a fan point of view at that time.
Right. And the fact that they're from Jersey, I mean, that's right between that's right between Philly and New York. So that makes it even more apropos.
I think that their style was like a montage of both of those sounds, the New York sound and the Philly sound, the soulful elements and stuff. And that's what I think I gravitated towards it the most because of that.
I was going to mention Philly sound because we've had a couple of shows where the sound of Philly has come up. Most recently, we were talking to a band called The Shacks about a band called The Sapphires, and we were sort of trying to distinguish between various soul sounds. You know, when I was looking into music, I didn't find much disco in the Philly sound, with the exception of The Tramps and Disco Inferno. Am I missing something? Were there disco funk hybrids that were a part of Philly sound?
You certainly are. That is the Philadelphia sound. Disco started in Philadelphia. Mothers, you know, the mother, father, sister, brother band, house band or whatever, Pete Humphries and all those guys engineering and stuff. That's kind of like where the nucleus of the sound started, and then it kind of spawned out.
Into soul.
If you remember it. Yeah, you know, if you remember, like, the Solar imprint, like the Soul Train theme is Love is the Message.
Yeah, sure.
That's the Philadelphia International anthem. But I think that the cool part about it is that it traveled and everybody put their own take according to the region and how they expressed themselves artistically and musically.
Right.
I think they, you know, they kind of imparted their version of it. And that's what, you know, kept the community, I think, thriving. You know, that's dope.
Well, I think one of the things that we're kind of circling around is that especially by this point in the early mid-1970s, you just have a lot of different distinct funk movements going on, right?
For sure.
You still, I mean, you're carrying over from James Brown in the late 1960s, early development of you know, what did he call it, like the heavy funk, right?
I don't care about your past.
And then you have, as Morgan's talking about, the emergence of disco funk by the mid 1970s, and then. You know, I always think of a lot of the West Coast bands. You have Charles Wright and the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band, and that's a distinct sound into itself. Ohio Players being another kind of, you know, in the mix with this. And we haven't even touched on P-Funk yet. So
we have not.
We talk about funk music and people sort of treated as one thing these days, but especially in the 1970s, there's not one funk sound. There's multitudes of funk happening and mm-hmm. encountering each other and mixing up and all these good things.
Tons of hybrids mm-hmm. of sounds and mm-hmm. And genres.
So, Bahamadi, if we can come back to the KGs then, do you remember how you first came across this album?
Yeah, my mom actually bought the album. Actually, I heard it on the radio. I heard it keep on bumping on the radio. Mm. And I asked about it, and she went and got it. She went and purchased it. And then I would listen to it over and over and over, wondering if it was like my favorite song. It just did something to me, especially on a Saturday morning in the springtime.
I love that idea of listening to an album like this on a Sunday morning, you know, and rather than kind of starting things off chill, it's like, let me just kind of get boom, you know,
right,
drop the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of what it was about their music that spoke to you so much?
It had like an innocence to it that was, well, I think it was like a youthful energy. I didn't find out that they were younger until I won't say researching it, but like, you know, you study the cover, and I was younger, so when I'm looking at it, they all look like adults to me. But then, you know, at that time, so then I started to find out that they were younger, and I thought that that was cool. And I think that's the thing that made me feel like I could relate to it. And then just trying to get into the arrangements and stuff like that, like how they would do like the bass lines, that was the first thing that caught me too.
Yeah.
I was going to say that my favorite song from the album is actually my favorite song.
And most of all, the emptiness I feel since you've been gone.
My favorite song, sing it all day long. When things go wrong, it's becoming strong. My favorite song, sing it all day long. When things go wrong,
that's my favorite song. It sort of reminds me it harkens back to my youth, because I grew up on a lot of soul records that started out with brothers talking at the beginning, particularly songs like The Floaters Float On.
Aquarius. And my name is Rally. Now I like a woman who loves her freedom. And I like a woman who can hold her own. And if you fit that description, baby, come with me.
Cameo. Why have I lost you?
Let's talk about loneliness. You know, sometimes it can fool you into believing you're on top of the world. No one can top you or stop you. And everything you ever wanted is right at your fingertips. But as always, reality steps in and shocks you right back into the present. And all you can do is ask yourself over, over, why?
I just think that I learned to listen to soul music and really wait for someone to start talking at the beginning. It was just like the intro, breaking down what the song was about to be about. What's your favorite song off this album? Or what do you think is the fire track here?
Well, as I said, I don't have a favorite, but one that really tugged at my heartstrings, as I said, was Wondering. And as I got older, I realized what they were saying. Because you know how when you're younger, you listen to songs and you kind of put your own spin on the lyrics, you know,
right?
As it relates to you, you know, and then you start learning the lyrics and all that stuff. Once I realized what they were talking about in the song, you know, just having compassion for, you know, from a humanitarian standpoint and just being peaceful and unifying, you know, all that kind of stuff, I thought that was really cool. So that's the one that really stuck out, and it tugs at my heartstrings, the harmonies in it. Particularly like the flute solo and all that.
Bahamadia, I love what you mentioned about the vocals on the tune in particular, because what always struck me about Wondering is that, especially that first half of the LP, and really the first half of the B-side as well, they're just sort of really hitting you hard with the funky funk stuff. And then Wondering is almost, to me, like an Earth, Wind, and Fire type of track.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't expect to hear it. And you're like, oh, they can do something completely different in sound. And I, you know, even as many times as I've heard the album now, every time Wondering comes on, as well as my favorite song, both of those songs do the same thing. It kind of takes you out of the album you thought you were listening to, and now you're dropped into something completely different.
And the whole record overall has like a really revolutionary tone to it, but it's palatable. You know, it doesn't make you feel alienated in any class or people. You know, it kind of unites everybody to like to have a dialogue about the times, you know, the things they were experiencing at that time. That's what I get, you know. Ain't No Time was another one that I love.
So what are you hearing when you hear this song?
I'm hearing an urgency of people getting it together. Like you don't have that much time. So let's focus on the things that really matter. You know what I mean? Mm. Let's love, let's create, let's live, you know, let's resolve our differences. You know, let's not take for granted that we're not promised tomorrow, you know? That's what we're doing.
You were saying a moment ago how to you a lot of this album sounds revolutionary, and it's I certainly think it definitely has a politics to it. It's just not necessarily as explicit as other albums in that era. So I'm wondering if you don't mind, could you just talk a little bit more about what is the revolutionary aspect of this? Because again, I think from someone coming from a distance, they look at a title like, you know, Keep On Bumping, they just think it's party tracks, but you're saying that there's really layers more beneath that.
Keep On Bumping is moving forward. It's going against the tide of what's oppressing you or what's trying to hold you back from being your greatest you. That's what I get it from it now. But it has different meanings each time in my years growing up listening to it and even revisiting it now where I am in my life. So that's what I mean. And then the subject matters too are really kind of heavy, but they had they made them palatable to people. You know, they weren't too overt in the message. It wasn't aggressive. Well, they took the aggression, I think, surfaced in like the arrangement and particularly like the bass line more even than the drum.
We will be right back with more of our conversation with Bahamadia talking about the KG's 1974 album Keep On Bumpin' and Master Plan after a brief word from some other fantastic Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
I'm James, the co-host of Minority Corner.
And look at that! I'm Aneke, the other co-host of Minority Corner.
Girl, guess what?
What?
We just hit our 100th episode!
What? And what do you think is going to be in store for the next 100?
Probably some more feuds with Jennifer Hudson.
And I'm telling you,
we'll probably do more investigative reporting, too, like we did with the Kodak and their racist film.
Not to mention exposing the truth, like how we did with the ugly history of the Texas Rangers.
But we always lighten the mood with a splash of pop culture.
Olivia Pope's new wig, have you seen that?
It's popping.
Just like your lip gloss.
And Janet Jackson.
And you know we like to put our nerd glasses on and talk about top things like Marvel.
It's true. That's it.
I don't speak about DC.
But you just did. Wow.
All from a perspective that's black, queer,
and ladylike.
So come on over and learn, laugh, and play, and join the corner. It's a lot of fun.
I'm having fun right now. Minority Corner.
We're back on Heat Rocks talking about the KG's Keep On Bumpin' and Master Plan album from 1974 with Philly's B.B. Queen and one of my faves, Bahamadia. Now, one thing that I wanted to ask about was the popularity of Who's the Man with the Master Plan. That seems to be the track that when people think of the KG's and this album, they think of that. Why do you think this one is often sampled and also is one of the most standout tracks for other people on this album?
Because it's super dope and there's so many different elements and phrases and nuances in that track particularly. I think the title and the subject matter can be applicable to any situation. You can personalize it. So for some people, it could have been a political statement from the president, who's that, who's the man, or it could have been, you know, your popularity in your personal, your immediate circle, you know, it could have been, you know, applied to, you know, dancing, because I know a lot of people really boogied and, you know, had a good time back in that time, you know, the same Soul Train lines and all that cool stuff, pop locking in your area, you know, all of that, right?
Sure.
So it could have been that, it could be a lot of different things, you know?
Production-wise, what do you like about the song? What do you like about the build of the song? What do you like about how the song is constructed?
I love the way it starts out, but the beginning when it first comes on, it's just, I can't even describe it. Like, I really have a lot of words for it. The whole project, the way it was put together, the interludes, the transitions, how they would start off like from one point and then that one groove would turn into a whole nother like song, and it just wasn't anything like it out at the time.
Yeah.
And then I can hear the influence like in a Madlib production or a J Dilla production.
Sure.
In association with that same theory applied today, you know, and in the time, recent time.
There's sort of a party atmosphere. Sounds like a lot of people in a room or a lot of people at a party.
Right, right.
And it reminds me a lot of the beginning of Funkin' for Jamaica. This back and forth, which I think was important at the time to establish that there was a community of brothers, empowered brothers, but everyone was having a good time, despite of what was going on in 1974 and other times, that there was just this community. And I think maybe that helped to set the tone for the song, at least for Funkin' for Jamaica. By the time you get to the vocals, you're so hyped because it feels like this party that you were privy enough to be invited to. And I get the same feeling listening to that bit we heard. I don't know if it's 50 people in the room, but it certainly, to your point, sounds like a lot of voices, a lot of personalities. Mm.
Bahamadita, we've been talking about the fire tracks off this album. I'm wondering, what to you is the sleeper jam?
Actually, I thought Wondering was the sleeper track.
Because you just...
I always thought, because I never heard a lot of people even discuss it. You know, it's there. Some people didn't even know it was on the album. I don't know why, but because I always thought it was amazing. But I think that's the sleeper track.
Morgan, how about you? You got a sleeper jam on here?
I'd have to say Get Down.
Hey, you! It's a funky groove!
Right.
It's gonna make you move!
What you say?
It ain't ain't nothing but the real
thing. Everybody get down.
Say it again. It ain't nothing but the real thing.
To the funky sound.
To your point that you just mentioned, that just starts you off so hyped. Like, whatever the song is going to be, it has an amazing start. And people don't talk about that one a lot, but it's not my favorite, but I think that's the sleeper jam on the album, for, at least for me, I'll say. And that's my sleeper jam. Do you like that song? You didn't mention that one, but if you do, what is it that you like about that song?
It's a roller skate song. You know, there's some songs that you can skate really well. And you know funk and stuff. You know, that's like the soundtrack to people in skating culture. Not skateboard, but just regular skating. Old school roller skating, yeah.
Right.
And so to do the little bops and the boogies and the dips and the twirls and all of that, yes, that's a perfect tune for that.
You're aging me a little bit because I remember all that, and I remember I also grew up in the 70s, so that does remind me of roller skating. We had a little rink that we used to go to, and it's certainly a part of growing up black folks in the 70s, and that was sort of our entertainment, was going to the roller skating rink and hearing great music like that. And it, to me, was like dancing and stepping meets roller skating.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All the moves that you had to do, and soul music was a heavy part of that culture.
I like that you're picking the very first song on the album as a sleeper jam.
Absolutely. But the way these songs are titled, I'm still blown away that there's a song in the album called Anthology.
Yeah, and that's the song I wanted to talk about. And Bahamadia, I would love to get your thoughts on this, because to me, when this track comes on, it is such a, I mean, and I don't mean to make a pun here given your own album title, but it is a sound collage experiment. I mean, they're taking parts of the album itself, and it is called Anthology. So I guess maybe they prepare you for the fact that they're going to revisit the album that you just listened to and bring in the clock sound from Ain't No Time. They're going to bring in Who's the Man from the Master Plan. Mm-hmm. And they're going to set it over drums, but the vocals are not synced well. So in other words, everything feels a little bit offbeat and off kilter. And it really feels like, you know, a very almost late 1960s experimental sound experiment that they decided to throw on there at the end. And I'm wondering, and it doesn't sound like anything else on the album in that respect, even though it's taken from the album. I'm wondering, Bahamadia, when you got to Anthology the first time you went through the album, what did you think of it?
My mind was blown. I was like, I had never heard anything like it before. And then, but you know what it showed me is in developing my own style and approach to making music, that you use everything and you can express yourself with just that one palette. Like, you may have one palette, right? You can color and shade so many different things with that one palette, and even create your own additional colors within that scheme, the color scheme. And that's what I learned, you know, about them, because I used to think that you needed like a lot. But they had a really minimalist approach, even though they were a band. They still took a minimalist approach to making that record.
Right.
Yeah, that whole cut and paste aesthetic.
Yeah. This is my favorite song. Let's bring the world to unity. Inflation in the nation, headed for starvation. Let's bring the world to unity.
You know, you hear that. I think of Double D and Steinsky from late 80s. And
right, wow, yeah.
We're going to do a song that you never heard before.
The torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans.
Lesson three.
Right, cold cut stuff. Sure. I mean, that was a huge part of hip-hop in the late 80s, was just taking a bunch of different tapes, splicing it all together.
Sure,
right.
So generally we'll ask artists what songs from the album, if they had a chance to, what songs would they, would they remix or would they reproduce? In this case, because we mentioned that so many of these songs have been sampled by other artists, if you had to record a new song and use one of these songs to sample, which one Just out of curiosity, which one would it be?
It would be my favorite song.
Why that one?
Just because I haven't seen, a lot of people haven't used it. They've used the vocals, but they haven't used the elements and the drums or the other stuff in there.
Mm.
And they certainly haven't used the vocal a lot. I haven't heard it unless it's been flipped and chopped so much so you can't distinguish where it came from and where the source came from.
Sure. What parts of the song, or besides the drums, what parts are you really attracted to as a sample?
Probably like the beginning and towards the end of the song. It's like a little nuance beat before the song rides out. You hit it. You know the part. I'm sorry, I got excited. did you hear the little funk groove right there?
Yeah.
See, people would miss that, but you know, like listening, like even coming up, like listening, putting your ear to the speaker and just finding it. Like you just find it.
You know.
I'm sorry, I got excited. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. We love that. One other song, and this isn't technically on the original album, though it's been included on the subsequent reissues of Keep on Bumpin' and Master Plan, which is a song the group recorded, I think, a year later, 1975, called Hustle With Every Muscle, which was a theme song apparently from a television show called Party.
Come on, people!
So we still have a little bit more of that of the party, you know, listening to people talking vibe
right.
That Morgan was talking about. And this would have completely fit into the album itself. The vibe is completely in line with that. But my question here to both of you, do either of you remember the television show? I grew up in the 70s and I don't remember.
I sure don't.
Party
I don't
either.
At all. I don't remember it at all.
What network was it on? Was
I don't
it?
I don't know.
Well, hell, there were only like three networks.
Right.
So it had to be.
Right.
But it sounds very like ABC alongside with the Fantasy Island, the Love Boats. It sounds like
mm-hmm,
it would be on
mm-hmm.
there.
But I'm just trying to think of a funk song like this being something that you'd be tuning into 8:30, for example, on ABC, and this would come on. I mean, this is a lot more fire than, let's say, the Welcome Back Cotter theme, and
absolutely.
That's, which is great. Like,
right.
Absolutely.
I mean, really raw for, are you serious,
right.
In prime time?
Maybe that's why the show didn't come out. It didn't last.
It was, probably.
The theme song was too funky.
Haters at the network.
That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Bahamadia. Her most recent release came out last fall called Dialed Up 2. And any time now, you should be hearing her next full-length album entitled Here. Bahamadia, thank you for joining us. And where can people find you?
They can find me on social networks at Queen Bahamadia, at Bahamadia, at B-Girl Records, LLC, and bgirlrecords.com.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Morgan Rhodes, and Oliver Wang. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for letting us use it. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Oliver Wang, and Kara Hart. And today's show was engineered and edited by Kara and Mike D out of Real Black in Philadelphia.
Yeah, thank you for doing that, Mike.
Shout out to Mike. We're part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their beautiful studios in the bumpin' Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Want to take a quick moment out to thank all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers, and that includes Ty Woe Head, Bria, Mr. Hostetter, Amy Toludo, Violence Jones, Raf DS112, and Mijazaris Rex. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Thanks to everyone for leaving a review there. If you haven't had a chance, we very much appreciate it. It is a big way in which we can build our audience. So if you do have a quick minute and want to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be lovely.
Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.